That song just, I was looking at your faces, and now that you're sitting farther forward, I can see some of your faces, and I know we all just, it resonated in us. So thank you so much to the group and to Bob for that music. I was at a restaurant this week, and I was listening to the people behind me, and it turned out that there were two guys, and they were talking back and forth. One of them was obviously some sort of businessman. The other one seemed to be a farmer. And the farmer mentioned to the businessman that he had run into some financial trouble several years back. And he said that it was so bad that his bank was going to repossess the farm, his house, and even his car. He was in that much trouble. Well, the other guy was pretty shocked to hear it, and he was feeling badly for his friend. And so he started asking him a few questions. He said, did you go and get financial advice from your banker, or at least some legal advice from your lawyer? And the farmer said, no, actually, he hadn't done that. He went to his preacher for advice. Well, of course, my ears really perked up then. And I'm wondering, what in the world would his preacher have given him advice on his finances for? Well, he said, the other guy asked him that question. He said, well, my minister told me to go home, open up the Bible, and the first two words that I see, I'm supposed to follow that advice. I'm thinking, who is that preacher? Well, of course, his friend, the businessman, kind of was taken aback at that answer too, and he asked how it had worked out. And the farmer said, you know, just really, really wonderful. He said, I now have over 2,000 acres of crop. I live in a very nice four-bedroom house, and you may have noticed in the parking lot I've got a 2014 Cadillac. And both the businessman and I were kind of scratching our head. Okay, I was so glad he asked. What two words were in the Bible that helped you so much and changed things so dramatically for you? And the farmer said, chapter 11. It has nothing whatsoever to do with the sermon. I just had to tell you. So our scripture for today is from Matthew 9, chapter 9, verses 35 and 36. And it's very short, but I think a powerful text. Jesus went about all the cities and villages, teaching in their synagogues, preaching the gospel of the kingdom, and healing every disease and every illness among the people. But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered. Weary and scattered. Another version reads, harassed and helpless. Weary and scattered, harassed and helpless. Have you ever felt that way? I think so many people around us are weary and scattered and can't find a healing connection to another person or a group. And sometimes those people, perhaps you or me, we internalize a sense that we're somehow at fault or that we aren't living up to our potential, when in fact, that is often not the case. This week, we lost Robin Williams to suicide, and social media just kind of blew up with opinions, stories, tributes, and tirades about it. And the sad, ironic twist, of course, hasn't passed anyone by, that Robin Williams brought so many generations laughter and joy in our lives. And yet, at the last, in his own soul, he struggled to find that joy and happiness. And I think Robin's death sheds light on our common humanity. Suicide is the 10th leading cause of death in the United States. It kills more people than motor vehicle accidents and more than twice of homicide victims in our society. And it's time, I think, that we talked about it in church. More than 39,000 people each year die by suicide. That makes as many as 107 people who took their own life, perhaps, on the same day that Robin Williams did. As one who has participated in and led grief groups, I'm going to just admit up front readily that I have a little bit of a soapbox about this stigma that is attached to suicide. The phrase commit suicide is laden with religious history and doctrine. To commit literally means a mistake, a crime, or an immoral act. And so, when we talk about suicide, I teach that the words should be took her own life or he died by suicide instead of the words commit suicide. The reasons are many, but for one, in centuries past, religions of all different sorts condemned those who took their own lives. In fact, in Roman Catholicism and in Judaism, those who died by suicide were buried in a separate part of the cemetery and were refused religious rites. Can you imagine that it was only in 1983 that the Roman Catholic Pope proclaimed that the church would allow funeral rites and burial rites to those who died by suicide? Only since 1983. And in evangelical Christians and in Islam, suicide is considered a sin. And because this ultimate sinful act can't be repented of, they say, it's often been treated as an unforgivable sin. Okay, I'm going to step off my soapbox now. Because these doctrines and beliefs about taking one's own life, the church has done, in my opinion, a great disservice to the grieving families and also to our God. What do these ideas say about God? That a divine person, that a divine being looks upon a person who has lost hope in life and looks upon them with judgment and disdain? In my book, that's abusive theology. But we don't want to err on the other side either and say, oh, go ahead, it's just fine. Don't have a problem with it. Because suicide shouldn't be presented as a means to resolve or to escape one's problems. Suicide doesn't make you free, wrote Dr. Bill Schmitz, and it doesn't take away the pain. It just disperses the pain to family and friends. When a person takes his or her own life, they are dead, and that is devastating. The God I know, live, and move, and have my being is a God of compassion and mercy and forgiveness. Love like this is greater than any attempt to judge and dismiss people. You know, one of the hardest things in life, I think, is for us to forgive ourselves. And the way we can learn to do that is through a compassionate connection to other people. That way others can reach out and touch the wrongs and touch the lives and touch the hearts of one another and then help them let go of whatever it is that's troubling them. When Robin Williams played a role of a therapist in the movie Good Will Hunting, his character portrayed that kind of compassionate connection that we can have with another person. While counseling a young man about abuse in his past, Williams' character, the therapist, repeated over and over and over to the young man, "It's not your fault." "I know," said the young man. "It's not your fault. But it's not your fault." Again and again and again until the tears flowed. "It's not your One of the major reasons that I believe being a member of a church is that church at its best is a place where people can deal with the realities of life like this, a place of hope and healing. When we are weary and scattered like the people of Jesus' time, when we are harassed and hopeless, the church can be a place of hope and healing. And it doesn't mean that we always do it perfectly, but this is what we are called to do and to be, a place of healing and hope. It has profound implications because being a place of healing and hope doesn't happen without effort. The church, as I was talking with the children, is not an entity in and of itself. In order for the church to exist as a place of healing and hope, it has to have people. And those people are the ones who make the church a place of sanctuary to the weary and the scattered, to the harassed and the helpless. We are that church. We are the ones who create the healing and the hope, that compassionate connection that we need. Anne Lamont has our contemporary word for today. It's in your bulletin. I hope you won't turn to it, because if you've already read it, you know I copied and pasted a quote from her, and it has an expletive in it that I intended to replace and did not. So let me apologize for that. It was not my intention for that to be in our bulletin. But I want you to hear her words regardless. She says, "I would much rather prefer that God have a magic wand and not just a raggedy army of helpers. But we are God's embodiment in this world. So when tragedy hits, our task is to unfold in love those who get hurt." She also wrote, "In all barbarity and suffering, in Iraq, India's ghettos, in the African Ebola towns, in St. Louis with its racial tensions, and in Robin Williams' death, we see Christ crucified." I don't mean that in a sweet Christian way. I mean it in the most ultimate human and existential way. The temptation is to say, as cute believers sometimes do, "Oh, it'll all make sense someday." The thing is, it may not. Yet, we still sit with scared, dying people, and we gulp thirsty gulps of water. It's not enough to mourn the loss of a great actor and comedian. His life must be resurrected, and it will be each time one of us, you or me or someone else, reaches out to those with depression and addiction. It's not enough to be horrified by the barbaric treatment of the people in Iraq, or the conflict between Hamas and Israel, or the people in St. Louis protesting oppression. These stories are worth telling when we find God in them, when we find resurrection in them, when we find hope in them. It's easy to sit around with our friends and despair over the world's events. It's tempting to sit on the sofa and cry for all the terrible news out there. But as people of faith, we are called to do more than that. We are called to be compassionate connectors. And like Jesus, when we see the weary and the scattered, we're moved with compassion. And that's a lot different than sadness or hopelessness, because compassion is an active word. It means we get up off the sofa and we donate to suicide prevention. It means we stop the despairing conversations with our friends and we volunteer somewhere to bring hope to the hopeless. It means we bake bread and take it to someone who's hurting. It means we visit people who are sick and lonely. It means that we offer the one word of hope and healing in the conversation at work. It means we mentor and teach children that there's hope and life in our world. Because the gravity of life will knock us down, even the strongest and the funniest of us. And we need a little help getting back up. And as the daughter of Robin Williams said, the entire world is forever a little bit darker, a little less colorful, and less full of laughter in his absence. So, we'll just have to work twice as hard to fill it back up again. Let us all be those people, that compassionate connection that fills up the world that is weary and scattered, harassed and hopeless. And yet let us be the people who speak hope and love in this hurting world. Amen. Our hymn of faith is a different one, and I'm going to play it through for you once, and then you can join in singing, so you'll have to give me a moment to get to the piano. Please stand as you're able.
All the choir members who are here, please sing lustily, would you please? Paul.